You can be seated, please. Good morning, Chief Justice Moyer's mother passed away late Saturday evening, and therefore the chief will not be able to be present this morning. He will, however, be participating in the cases and voting the consideration of the cases. I'm sure that all of you join with all of us in expressing our sympathy to the Chief Justice. Our first case this morning is Hocking Technical College versus Hocking Technical College Education Association. For the appellants, Mr. Foley. First of all, you'll have to speak up.
Is the microphone on?
Yeah.
If it isn't, I'm sure I can make myself heard.
And secondly, you should know that we have a very full agenda today, so you'll be splitting whatever time is there. Just remember, when the white light comes on, you have 2 minutes.
This court is aware of this case involving an arbitrator decision that there was not just cause to terminate a 1 to 2 year employee at Hocking Technical College. This decision of the arbitrator was then overturned by the Common Pleas Court, and the Court of Appeals upheld that coming to the court today. And the important issue in this court is to make it clear that when parties agree to arbitration and as a method of resolving labor disputes in the collective bargaining arena, and particularly in the public sector as well as in the private sector, that those are final and binding. And it's only in those situations where there really is an abuse of discretion by an arbitrator that it could be overturned. Here we have a situation.
But the arbitrator's decision must take its essence from the contract.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we've gone pretty far with arbitration and supported it and even upheld those kind of decisions. Didn't the arbitrator here just ignore the agreement?
No, Your Honor. The arbitrator in this case was presented with the issue for arbitration that was trying to agree to by the parties, and that was there just cause for the termination? And in this case, the agreement set forth language that says, number one, if you have absences or parties that add up to absences, then you will be subject to termination for cause. And then there's a separate provision that goes through the establishment of cause and was there just cause. The college, in essence, and the court below have rewritten the contract and interpreted subject to and made it read that a specific per se violation amounts to just cause or termination. The contract didn't say that. And so the arbitrator in this case interpreted that contract language, and we believe rightly so, that there was a two-step process. Number one, and mind you, that wasn't the only reason. In fact, if you look at the case, the college was primarily saying that this was an insubordinate person who had falsified records, and that really was the grounds that she was going to be terminated.
But did she, in fact, have accumulated these unexcused absences and tardiness that the agreement called for a discharge?
That is accurate, and it made her subject to being terminated for just cause. Now, mind you, this agreement was negotiated and went into effect in 1993. That came after this court's decision in Hillsborough and in the Office of Collective Bargaining case, and in fact, after the Queen City case. And if you look at those cases, and with that as backdrop, people who were negotiating contracts were told that if there was explicit language in your contract that limited the powers of an arbitrator, then the arbitrator was so limited. And in this case, they did not have that language. If you look at the language in the OGB case, where it says that There is no power in the arbitrator to overturn a termination where somebody has abused a client, to paraphrase. That contract has specific language that limited the power of the arbitrator. Now, in this case, all the contract said was, if you reach a threshold, you were subject to termination for cause.
May I ask you about that?
You will be terminated.
Well, I want to ask you about what's the difference between those two things.
And will be terminated.
And but let me pose the question.
Okay.
The entire contract, I mean, anybody, under the terms of that contract, just cause is required for termination.
Absolutely.
So why doesn't your reading of just cause in this particular part of the contract render the whole, render redundant the setting forth of five unexcused absences or seven times tardy? Why isn't that redundant, since subject to termination for just cause, that goes without saying throughout the contract?
Well, I don't know if it goes without saying throughout.
I'm sorry, it is said throughout the contract. Just cause is a basis for discharge.
Yes, there is a specific contractual provision that says no employee shall be terminated or otherwise disciplined except for just cause.
So subject to, you're two steps, yeah.
Well, I think you're going to have to go back and ask the parties that. And of course, that's why you have an arbitrator, and that's why the parties agree.
No, that's we're able, the courts are able to discern the meaning of those words. And if the words, as you read them, render, you know, the whole import of that paragraph to be at best redundant, then that wouldn't be a fair reading of the contract, would it, counsel?
Well, there are two points to that. Number one, I don't think that makes it redundant. I think that what the parties bargained for was to, in essence, put an employee on notice. If you got to a certain level, of your tardiness and your absences, then you would be subject to being terminated for just cause. You still would have...
Isn't an employee on notice of that? The contract says all discharges will be only for just cause. So an employee already knows that, don't they, from other parts of the contract?
The employer or the employee?
Employee on notice.
Well, certainly the employee knows. In fact, that was an important issue that was bargained, was that in all discharge cases and yep. all disciplinary actions, they would be for just cause.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all I can say is the parties did not say, once you reach this level, this constitutes just cause for termination. All it said was it would make you subject to a termination for just cause. And obviously, at that point in time, somebody's going to have to decide, was there just cause? Because there could be a variety of reasons why a person was asked, why a person was hard.
But we aren't just saying, we said if the contract says unexcused absences.
And admittedly, you can have a variety of reasons uh-huh. for unexcused absences. And if you look at this case, that was true. In fact, if you look at the parties in this case, Ms. Barto, over a period of years, was led down a primrose path, in essence, that where previously, when she had another supervisor, she was tardied and she could make them up by... using her 15 minutes of break time and that sort of thing. And in essence, what you got in this case was a discipline by angels. You didn't have a supervisor who was saying anything. And I guess I would pose another question to
the
you.
The record indicates that she was quite informally willing. The record also indicates that she was told no more unexcused absences than a doctor. The Court of Appeals reported 21 party times in her official, 8 that are undocumented, absences were 7 times. If you're saying, what you're saying to me is, they have to figure out that thing. Now this time, we're really, really clear that you're going to get fired, despite the contract and the HR and fire. At what point does she become a problem employee? Just tolerated, is what you're saying?
I don't know that that's the issue, but I think that is what the parties contemplated in their contract when they said that a person would be subject to discharge, they contemplated that somebody was going to do an assessment and evaluation and determine whether, in that particular case, somebody should be terminated for just cause. And I would pose the question, could the college, and in fact, college did not terminate, because it wasn't, once you got to a certain point, she was automatically terminated.
So
that did not happen.
The informal boarding, you don't have the,
I'm not saying that those don't count. I'm saying that
what do they mean?
They go into the consideration that the decision maker is going to make in whether or not there is just cause for termination.
And was she, in fact,
I believe that she was informed. Well, there was some dispute about that. If you look at Ms. Bartow's testimony on it, there was some dispute as to exactly what was said by her supervisor, and that's why.
How was that an ambush?
Well, as I was indicating, number one, when she had a previous supervisor, there were tardinesses that she was given an indication that she could make up if she was tardy. Number two, she was never told about the tardiness. The supervisor, Mr. Luce was making some corrections to her time card, whether there was tardiness, or there was not. In fact, there was a position on the time card. He was supposed to mark down a T if it was considered tardy. He didn't do that. He circled some, and he kept his own record. But he didn't tell her, I'm keeping these records. She also had a college situation where you had different time clocks, you know, which one was right and which one wasn't. Like I said, these are all issues that go to, was there just cause for termination? And the parties bargained to have an arbitrator make that determination. And the arbitrator, in this case, looked at all those things and determined that there was not just cause. Now, should courts be overturning a decision by an arbitrator that they made, that he made, after looking at all these facts? And that's the case that you have here. We can debate these, you know, was there not just cause, but the fact of the matter is, in the labor environment, and in other cases, where people have bargained for an arbitrator to make those decisions, you should give credence to the arbitrator unless it is clear that he has abused his discretion. That's not so in this case.
Well, if you want to make arbitration binding, why do you allow then in the contract the ability to appeal a decision of the arbitrator?
I don't understand.
Well, you want the arbitrator's award binding,
yes,
on the parties. And is that able to be disputed by the party that lost?
By appealing it?
Yes.
Well, there's a statute that provides for appealing the court. That's not by contract.
The contract is silent as to the ability.
No, the contract says the decision of the arbitrator will be binding. The ability to go into court on
is by statute. Right. Now, are you saying that the institution has an obligation to warn the employee before they can do anything?
Well, I would answer that yes. And the reason I would answer it yes is that in the context of labor disputes and the labor environment, it's been recognized over time that just cause for termination and fairness and treating an employee, you look at a number of things. And one is giving a person notice of a problem and an opportunity and those sorts of things to remedy.
But wouldn't she have noticed when the change of circumstances came about that her activity that had been tolerated in the past may not be the same now with a new supervisor? Wasn't she obligated to take that into account and to get the lay of the land straight before she proceeded with the activity that she had been doing all along?
I would not dispute that, but that's an issue for the arbitrators to decide. And I think this court should tell the lower court that that's what the party bargained for. It was to have an arbitrator make decisions on all these things. And since that is a key element involved in a fair dismissal and just cause, the arbitrator making those determinations, it should not be disturbed by a court second-guessing an arbitrator. And this court has said that on a number of occasions. It wants to promote arbitration, and it will uphold an arbitration. I think if you look at Justice Douglas's footnote in the Hillsborough case, that is clearly what the court is favoring, and they highly promote arbitration.
While we're looking at that, you have less than 2 minutes.
Tougher question is what other meaning can you give to subject to?
Subject to discharge for just cause means you have a triggering factor on the absence of the arbitrator still has authority to interpret whether or not in these peculiar circumstances, every case to you, whether or not in these peculiar circumstances there was just cause for discharge. So that's the job of the arbitrator, and one can tell listening to the questions from the court. These cases are very interesting. They become unique on their facts. The toughest job the court has is to stay out on the merits. That's hard. It's tempting. If I was sitting in one of the seats, I would be tempted. But I would say, no, we won't get into the merits. We won't see any express language excluding this arbitration. We're all standing here arguing about what are the facts and what does that provision mean? Mm-hmm. Is it arguable that it means what I assume it means? Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it arguable that it means what these employer asserts it means? Yes. It's arguable. And that means the court can stay out. The court should enforce the arbitration process protected from corruption.
Now it's time to hear what he has to say. Your time is up here. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Ben?
Thank you, Justice Douglas. May it please the court, counsel. The arbitrator in this case made the specific finding that there was a sufficient number of absences to cause Ms. Bartow's discharge under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement. That's page 4 of his award. That's it. It's over.
Do you agree that subject to, that phrase, can be read in the manner that the appellant says here?
No, Your Honor. Well, only in an illogical way, only in a way that renders the absenteeism provision, or the unexcused absence provision, the tardiness provision, superfluous. Because under Article 13, the standard is always just cause. This is under discharge. In Article 12, you have a specific provision that an employee with 7 unexcused absences is subject to discharge for just cause. In other words, as the trial judge found, Michael Ward, and the Court of Appeals found in the unanimous decision, that 7 unexcused absences is per se just cause.
If you're the employer here could have written the contract in the manner suggested by the appellant here, which is shall be discharged.
You're correct.
What's your best argument for why that does that matter to this court?
It does not matter. And again, the process must be understood in the context of the collective bargaining. parties sitting around a table negotiating an agreement. That's the language they agreed upon, and it is sufficiently clear in the sense that subject to, or if you put move the just cause in before that, it means the same thing, because the standard is always just cause, and this court will read the agreement in a way that it gives meaning to each provision. The arbitrator made that specific finding. He made that specific finding that there was a sufficient number of unexcused absences. He then went on to actually write his own contract as to what he thought it should be, and that was with respect to some type of progressive discipline. And everybody, including the college in this case, agrees that an arbitrator should be given due deference. But when the arbitrator's award departs from the essence of the contract, and he exceeds his authority, the trial court will step in and correct that. They can't. And that's what the trial judge did in this case.
What was his authority? What was the arbitrator's
authority? The arbitrator's authority on three different provisions, Justice Piper, was to determine whether there was just cause. And that related to a claim of insubordination and a claim of falsification and unexcused absences. And it is simply not true that the unexcused absences was somehow subservient. That's not the case. The college, from the very beginning, maintained that Joe and Mark had a problem getting to work, and Joe and Mark admitted she had a problem getting to work. The arbitrator, though, did not have the authority, Your Honor, to add to or subtract from this agreement.
But his authority was to determine whether or not her conduct with respect to attendance at work constituted just cause.
Is whether the discharge...
I mean, is that the scope of what he's...
Essentially, the issue is whether there was just cause. You're correct. Whether there was just cause. There was really no other way to frame it. One might ask, and Justice Douglas raised this in the Ohio Collective Bargaining case, why not frame it as whether she had seven unexcused absences? That could be an alternative, but the problem was she had the insubordination, she had the falsification, and the standard is always just cause, regardless. And so the college...
So with respect to each problem, there were three problems. The scope of authority was to determine whether or not there was just cause for determination.
That is correct. And they didn't like the standard which the agreement gave them, without the authority to add to or subtract from the agreement. And in this case, the arbitrator's award conflicts with the express terms of the agreement in the sense that he makes the specific finding on page 4 that there was a sufficient number of discharges to warrant her dismissal under the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement. Knowing it like that the standard is always just cause, he then went on to make the finding that she was tardy over 28 times. And if you look at the agreement, this is a 7-month period. Joanne Bartow had the responsibility of opening the Media Resource Center, the library. Several memos and oral reprimands were given to her saying 10 to 12 students were sitting outside waiting for you. The library can't open without you. So study 30 is an important time.
Assume for a moment that I'm attracted to your side of the argument. How do we support your position and not invite a plethora of appeals on every arbitration case when we've said time and time again we encourage arbitration to keep cases out of court?
I think, Your Honor, that arbitration, the integrity of arbitration, needs to be upheld. When we have a situation where an arbitrator, like Arbitrator Cass in this case, exceeded his authority and his award conflicts with his own findings and the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, trial court was stepped into their that board. That's the only way to uphold the integrity. I would say also, Your Honor, that in many instances, in cases like this, there's probably high emotion. And one side or another, whether they come down the right side or not, they very well appeal anyway. But that doesn't make it right. This is the sanctity and the integrity of arbitration has to be upheld. But it must be realized also that we have the General Assembly's statute 27.11.10, and that's a requirement on the trial court. Vacated the award if it exceeds its authority. In this case, his award conflicts with his own findings and with the collective bargaining agreement.
Counsel, in doing an arbitration, is the person who's conducting the arbitration to look at black letter look at it, or you could take the whole environment in one situation, could there be waivers, not the right term, but of specific terms of employment due to the history of the relationship between the employer and employee. The contracts is one thing, the conduct between the employer and the employee and then another over a long period of time. When you get to arbitration, do you take all those things in consideration, or do you just look at the black letter of the contract?
Well, I think the answer is in this case, the arbitrator wrote it, and I don't know that you can really avoid that when you have the testimony like in this case as to what the negotiating was between the parties and what the
So following up on what Justice Douglas asked, what's our rule of law with respect to arbitration and when the courts can come in and second guess and what they can't?
Well, in this case, when the arbitrator, his award fails to draw its essence from the agreement and he acts in an arbitrary manner, then the courts will step in. In this case, that's exactly what happened. His award conflicts with the agreement. It conflicts with his own award. And on page 13, it conflicts with what he said on page 4, after making the specific finding of just cause. He then says, well, the college gave Ms. Bartow the impression that this was not of any importance. Well, that's not true. The record is full of warnings and the testimony of Roger that he did everything in his power to help her. He gave her a new assignment. He let her take control of the media desk. And the first day she did that, the next day she didn't show up. She had two parties that very week. He bent over backwards, and that's his exact word. That's what he was trying to help.
So our rule would be that it's not an abuse of discretion for a trial judge to find that the arbitrator went beyond the scope of the contract.
Your Honor, I think the court needs to look at the agreement, needs to look at the award, and make a judgment based on those on the record itself. Because in this case, you can read the award, you can read the terms of the collective bargaining agreement. It's quite apparent that this arbitrator either was confused as the trust of the agreement or he was acting in an arbitrary manner. And the reason, Your Honor, this two-part test that we've heard so much about now, that one, you had to have the unexcused absence, and then you had to find independent of that just cause. That was never brought up in the record. That was never argued by Ms. Bartow at the arbitration level. That only came up when it came time to have to defend arbitrator Katz's decision. But let's think about that for a moment. If that was the requirement under this collective bargaining agreement, then Ms. Bartow has an effect more protection than any other employee. Because she can dispute, as she did in this case, whether they calculated the 7 unexcused absences correctly. And then besides that, she said, wait, there's not just cause. There's some other reason, whether it be I didn't really know you were really serious or whatever. And that gives her more protection than anyone else. Ms. Bartow has to take personal responsibility for her actions. She was at party 20% of the time in a 7-month period. Employers can only go so far in this state to help and rehabilitate an employee that has a problem. And that's what Ron Lewis did in this case. Your Honor, also, it's important to keep in mind that Ms. Marshall was killed 3 times before she was terminated. In the due process here, which is required both constitutionally and under the agreement, 3 different times she was allowed to come in and say, I don't think I should be discharged because this is. She showed up and she said nothing. All 3 times. She had to go over to the staff of the college to defend its records. She said nothing. 3 different times. She let her go on. And the college asked her, say, why do you don't think you ought to be terminated? Said nothing. The bottom line, Your Honor, is the arbitrator should have ended his analysis after making that specific finding on page 4 that she had a sufficient number of absences, unexcused absences. Instead, he went on. And he essentially put in his own requirement in the contract that the college provides progressive discipline. And the record shows from Dr. Maxson and others at the college that the union specifically wanted progressive discipline. It wanted this restrike throughout, this constant warning about what everybody, what most employees should know is proper conduct anyway, but, and the college wouldn't stand for it. The college was not going to have it, because the college did not want its hands tied. They went to a backbinder, the backbinder even said, well, we can well have progressive discipline. The college said, no, we're not going to have that. And finally, the union and the college agreed on the language that's in there. Unless we're going to render Article 12 superfluous, the trial judge and the Court of Appeals will correct this arbitrator's decision in his authority. The arbitrator's authority does in fact manifest the fidelity of the agreement. And this court should affirm the judgment of the Court of Appeals and abolish that.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Your time is expired, Mr. Foley, but you can take 30 seconds.
I think if this court looks at the OCG case that was decided in the which was decided before the jury was agreed, it told parties how to write and what was necessary in the agreement in order to restrict the arbitration. And it decided to change it for the specific clauses that we need to get in contract. If you have marijuana, that's cause for termination. If you are guilty of dishonesty, that's cause for termination. Those were appended in the contract. They were specifically denominated as such, and those weren't in this contract.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted. We'll take it under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.